Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. I'm delighted, and today I'm being joined back again on the podcast by Louise Bayliss, who is campaigns coordinator for Focus Ireland and also spokesperson for Spark. Louise, it's great to have you back in Reboot Republic.
Thanks a million for the invite, Rory. I really appreciate it.
So today we're going to talk about homelessness and the recent figures that came out, the monthly figures come out. And this month they showed once again that homelessness has risen again after really since the pandemic, since the introduction of the ban on evictions and rent freezes that happened in that period of March up until I think early this year, there was a reduction in particular family homelessness. And we want to talk about that and talk about what's happened in the last couple of months that we've seen very disappointingly a rise again in families and their children becoming homeless, going into emergency accommodation. And I wrote an article in the Irish Examiner, which goes through some of this. And I will read that article at the end of the podcast after my discussion with Louise first. And just a reminder and I suppose a plea to our listeners that Reboot Republic is a independent podcast. It gets no funding except from you, the listeners. And it is produced by Tony Groves of Tortoise Shack Media. And Tony, it is Tony's job to produce these podcasts along with the other Tortoise Shack platform podcasts. It's not a hobby. This all requires a huge amount of work. And really to keep Reboot Republic going, we need financial support. So if you can, if you could, it would be fantastic to sign up to become a patron of ours, which is a supporter. You can sign up for as low as $2.50 a month and support us to cover the cost of production so we can keep bringing you these really important podcasts and covering the issues that matter to you. And if you do have something which you're interested in us covering, you can email us at rebootrepublic@gmail.com, or you can get me on Twitter at Rory Hearn or on Instagram as well. Send me a message if there's something you'd like to see us discuss or someone you'd like to have us discuss on the podcast. And I really want to say thank you to the people who've signed up. We have new patrons this month, so we really appreciate that. And thank you so much. So now, Louise, maybe you could take us through just this month's figures in terms of now that's looking back at we're now in 1st of November. So we're talking about homeless figures from September. What did we see?
Yeah, Rory, what happened, the most significant thing that happened last month was a big increase in child homelessness. So it went from, in August, there were 2,189 children in emergency accommodation, and that jumped to 2,344. That's been the biggest jump there has been this year. It's very worrying. The direction we want to see it.
No, and just to explain, Louise, that's not like individual children homeless. That's children with families.
Yeah, that's children in families. So it's part of family homelessness. So it's 2,344 children under the age of 18 living with their families, but living in emergency accommodation.
Yeah, that's right. And I calculated it's a 10% increase in children with families being homeless in just 2 months. It's really quite a shocking increase.
It is a shocking increase. And it is more so in that the way of child homelessness was calculated changed back in July. So we have a system called PASS, which we use to collect our notes and all our records. That changed to PASS 2. And in that changeover, there was a reclassification of children, adult children in homes. So for instance, if you had a 19-year-old in a home, in a family that was in emergency accommodation, that 19-year-old would have been included in the family, in the child homelessness figures. So in July, that was all changed over. So we would have expected a significant drop in child homelessness, where these adult children are now being reclassified. What we saw was youth homelessness did increase. So youth homelessness had a massive increase of 21% from June to July because of this reclassification, and went up by 165. Now, you would assume then that child homelessness would come down by the equivalent, 165. It didn't. It came down by about 50. So what it masked was there was an actual increase in childcare, about 120 that month. So what we have been seeing is a really strong increase in child homelessness. We went from a low of 2,129 in July to 2,344 now. And so that's very worrying.
Are you saying then, Louise, that the past system, which is how the numbers of people who are in emergency accommodation are counted by the local authorities across the country, that what's now we're being told that when we see in these figures, they say the numbers of families that are homeless with dependents, which are their children, that no longer that includes children, adult children who are with their families who are homeless over 18, that they are now put in the adult category, so therefore are not counted within the family and child homelessness?
They are counted as adults in the family homelessness section. So they're counted as adults, but they're not counted as children. So the figure that you see of 2,344 excludes teenagers over 18.
Okay, which is distorting. So
It's very hard to compare child homelessness now when the figures are, the way they're calculated are differently. Now it may be that that's a better system, but it is hard. It is distorting them slightly from we can't do a year-on-year comparison because it is different. And as I said, what is very worrying is in July there was a 21% increase in youth homelessness in the 18 to 24 category. We can only assume that's because of the adult children being reclassified and many of them fitting in the 18 to 24 category. So there was 165 extra youth homeless, and that represented 21%. But unfortunately, there wasn't the 165 reduction in child homelessness. So we know that there was an increase in child homelessness that month, which can't be seen as such.
Yeah. So essentially, we're saying we've had 3 months of rising family and child homelessness going into emergency accommodation.
Yeah, we've actually had four because from May onwards, we've had increases month on month. So child homelessness is definitely an issue that we're concerned about. Youth homelessness is an issue. We're also concerned, Rory, that in July, when the new reclassification came in, they stopped differentiating between lone parent households and two parent households because of, you know, reassessing and how the system reporting. We were told it was a temporary blip and that come August, we would get our figures broken down again. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened. So we know that there has been an increase in family homelessness and there are now 1,005 families homeless, but we don't know how many of them are lone parent households and how many are two-parent households. And without that information, it's hard for services to plan and to find solutions. And we urge classification back and those figures. We need the data to be able to do to make decisions and plan policies.
Yeah, that seems a very strange move to no longer include reference to one-parent families, lone-parent families in analysing and gathering the information on who is homeless, because that has been a very important figure that has shown that lone parents have been disproportionately affected by being made homeless over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And with my Spark hat on, it's very hard. Like we fought for services on the basis of lone parents being this needed to be a protected category. We haven't that data now to even make those claims, and that's something that is quite urgent. And I really genuinely hope that the Department of Housing can come up and get those figures to us as soon as possible. It's important we have this information. We have every other category broken down. We have who's in private emergency accommodation, who's where people are located, you know, geographically, what age group they're in. We have all the breakdowns, except we don't have the family status, which is a hugely important piece of research for us.
Yeah, no, it is. It is absolutely. That is very disappointing. That should be brought back. Just on the kind of figures I was looking at, which I think is something that, you know, Focus Ireland as well highlighted in recent research, around the issue of that there's one figure is the amount of people who are in emergency accommodation who are these monthly figures talk about. But the other thing is that there's people becoming homeless every day. and who don't go into emergency accommodation, but are prevented from going into emergency accommodation. But I was making my point in the Examiner article that really we should be, you know, looking much more focus on this, in particular for families and children who are being made homeless. And so they go through that traumatic experience of, you know, losing their home, most likely in the private rental sector. You know, you think of the stress on the family, the stress on the children. You know, we heard that really harrowing, upsetting story of a mother talking about her partner and her family being evicted in Wexford, and her child, you know, her children, the anxiety, the not wanting to go to school because the fear of you know, their home being gone when they got back. That there's all this trauma that we're doing to children, who then aren't even counted in the emergency accommodation, that there's this whole amount of people. And I was looking at the figures for the Residential Tenancies Board, and I would estimate that we could have about 2,500 people. We don't know, of course, how many of them are family and children, but 2,000 people in the private rented sector evicted this year. We know from the figures of the presentations that it's about double the amount of families and children are actually being made homeless every month than are going into emergency accommodation. So it's really, I think there's a need to look much wider about what is happening in terms of homelessness, and particularly for children and families.
Absolutely, Rory. I mean, there's one thing about, you know, exits, and we're all about trying to get people exited out of homelessness as quickly as possible, because we know the longer term they stay there, the more damage is caused to children in the long term. So we try to get quick exits. But we need to turn off the tap, and the eviction ban proved that the eviction ban turned the tap off. And when the eviction ban was there, we were able to work at getting people out of emergency accommodation. Unfortunately, with the eviction ban lifted, we've got new entries all the time. And as you can see by the rise in the figures, we don't have exits quicker than we have new entries. And that's where the problem is. And that's where you see the increase in homelessness. And we're going to be very quickly, if we don't get a grip on something, if we can't get the exits fast enough, i.e. the new bills or the new acquiring new homes for people, then we need to turn off the tap. But as it is, if we leave the tap running and we haven't the place to put people, the figures are just going to go up on this every month. And that's a worry that we would have in Focus Ireland. I'm just looking even at the figures for youth homelessness. At the start of the year, there were 760 young people, 18 to 24, homeless. That figure is now 989. There's a lot of trauma in that age group for, you know, 240 extra people homeless.
Yeah.
And we're looking at child homelessness, and that's increasing too. It's all very dismal. And at the start of the year, I suppose we all came into it, we were very cautiously optimistic. We knew the eviction ban was just temporary, and we were terrified that the government would think, oh, look, family homelessness is sorted, and look at the numbers coming down month on month. And it was to be celebrated that the numbers were coming down. And there was great collaboration work went on with the local authorities, with the state organisations, with the charities. Everybody worked together and everybody made a huge difference. But unless we get to the core root of the problem, you know, through eviction bans, through quick exits, it just is rising back up again. And that's very disappointing for everybody in the sector.
And it's obviously something as well that, you know, which you talked about and which I talk about as well, like that trauma that impacts on children and families, that to me, there's still a lack of attention given to in policy and in the whole approach, because they talk about it all the time. Well, we're getting, as you know, say, we're getting all these exits from, you know, emergency accommodation. Look how many people we're getting, which is great. And obviously it's what's needed. But there's not enough focus at that starting point. And I think part of it is because we don't really consider the being made homeless as a traumatic event, as something we need to stop. And there needs to, I think, be more understanding and research as well done. And that, look, this whole, you know, as I said, these months building up that impact on people and presenting as homeless, that it shouldn't be this end point, and, you know, where it's just, oh, are we providing enough emergency accommodation, or where are we turning to when they present as homeless? We should be stopping, you know, and going back and seeing what can we do to stop the presentations of homelessness.
And I think that's a very good point. And it was well made in the ESRI IRIC report, where they talked about housing precarity as well as homelessness. And that housing precarity were, as you said, very traumatic things for children afraid to go to school in case they come back home and their room is locked or they can't access their housing. So it's really important that we do look at housing precarity and the damage that's causing people as well. And the trauma of, you know, if you get an eviction notice of no, well, where do I go there, you know, yeah. And what can be done to support people in that. So that's really important too, that we do look at what's causing the new presentations. And we know by a long shot, as you're well aware, Rory, it is the eviction notice. It is landlords with either withdrawing from the market or taking it on. And it's living in that type of constant state of emergency is causing huge trauma for children. And then when they go into homeless emergency accommodation, their worst fears have realised. So that's not even an escape. It's just very depressing to think of all the rise is coming again. And we're going into another winter where, you know, and we know historically what happens is this time of the year, there tends to be less family homelessness because people are concerned about Christmas and landlords generally try to let families stay in it. We usually see a reduction in family homelessness and child homelessness and then a rise in January and February when Christmas is over with. So to see it rising at this stage of the year is not, it's not a good sign.
Yeah, no, it really is. And as you say, you know, there was, no, clearly the ban on evictions that was implemented during COVID had an impact. A major impact in reducing the amount of families and children being presented, being made homeless, should I say. And clearly, you know, it seems there's an obvious thing there. You know, the ban needs to be reintroduced for at least a temporary period of 2 or 3 years to stop, you know, families and children being made homeless.
I think what we need to do is make sure there that we do not have more presentations coming than exits. And there is only one way of doing that. And we need to look at those ways of preventing it. There's simple things that could be implemented immediately. As you said, one of them would be the eviction ban. There are other things that we would look at. We've called for in that our housing fraud submission, that there would be a task force to analyse, a lone parent task force, to look at solutions and problems of why lone parents are so disproportionately impacted. We know, obviously, it's poverty and all of that, but we know there are very other issues, very simple things around when, where there, you know, there's no help with mortgage payments if they're in a mortgage, or if they go to get rent that they're assessed as owning a house so they can't get rent. There's very small little things that could be tweaked that would prevent a sector of people getting into presentations in lone parents, because lone parents basically are the result of family breakups. And if we can support people at that family breakup stage, that would be hugely helpful too. And so one of the things, along with the eviction ban, we would look for those type of solutions too.
Yeah, and it's and of course as well, it's the building of social housing as well, and the building of social and affordable housing.
And well, that's the exit stage, you know, and you would, but until we are building fast enough for to match new presentations, these figures are going to continue to grow, and that's where the problem is. And we don't seem to be building fast enough to get people out quickly enough.
Yeah, and of course the other issue is that, you know, lone parent families who are in the rental sector, are obviously, you know, more likely to be a single income family. And we know the childcare issues that are there as well that mean, you know, many one parent families can't, you know, aren't in a, you know, position, financial position to actually be able to work or work the sufficient hours to cover rents. And then, you know, some are on the housing assistance payment, as there's lots of, you know, two parent families on the housing assistance payment as well. And a big issue, which you've highlighted and we've highlighted as well here, has been that, you know, rents have risen, you know, dramatically beyond what the limits that the housing assistance payment is available. And so you have families paying these top-ups on top of the rent to the landlord, on top of the HAP rent, on top of the rent they pay to the council. And for obviously one parent family, then that's even more challenging when you're trying to, you're putting more of your lower income into the rent. And so therefore I imagine that the rise in the rents and that growing gap between the HAP limit and the rents is also pushing families into homelessness as well?
It absolutely is. We know for a fact, and we're currently doing research at the moment, and we know for a fact that there is a significant number of people who accessed Homeless HAP who are in arrears now. And I would say through in arrears through no fault of their own. You know, when you're on a local authority house, you are assessed as a fair rent to pay. When you start on a Homeless HAP and any HAP, you are assessed on that same basis. But year on year, you're expected to increase your top up. And that's bringing people below supplementary welfare rates. It's below minimum essential living, which all social welfare is, but it's way below it. And people literally cannot do the top ups and are ending up in arrears. And that's really significant. And it's a real worry for people. If we don't get hold of the HAP, if HAP does not match what rents are, if people's contributions aren't assessed the same as they would be in local authority, it is an injustice. It's unfair that I was lucky to get a local authority, so I paid 15% of my income. You didn't get a house. You've got all that extra insecurity that I don't have in my local authority house. You have to not just pay your 15% or whatever your local authority is. You have to also pay maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 euro a week top up. And that's just so unfair that people on the same income, they're paying two different rents. One has security and one doesn't. Now, don't get me wrong, Rory. I'm not looking for the people in local authority to pay more or to be in insecurity. But I think it's time that we do give tenants on HAP the same benefits in as much as we can, in making sure we can't give them the security, which is unfortunate, unless we bring in the eviction ban. But we can at least make sure that they pay no more rent than anybody else on their same income.
Yeah, it's a very significant issue. The issue of the HAP, the housing assistance payment, being, you know, that gap that's growing. And you have, and HAP is officially a form of social housing, but as you say, yes, you have people who are in HAP having to pay top ups, and, you know, a local authority tenant in a social house who's supposed to be in social housing as well, not having to pay these top ups. So I think there's a real policy issue there as well, a policy contradiction.
There is also, and Rory, think of it as well, people who are on HAP have been taken off the housing list as they're deemed housed. They go on the transfer list, fine, but they're taken off the housing list. So when we look at housing numbers, you know, who's on the housing list? Anybody on HAP's not there, they're on the transfer list. So there's been a reduction because they're deemed to be housed by the local authority, and yet they do not have the same security or the same income benefits as somebody in a local authority has. And that is fundamentally unfair, and people are falling through the trap that they just cannot do it. The amount of people I hear in Spark who just say they cannot afford the 200 or 300 extra a month, you know, they may have started on HAP 3 or 4 years ago, and year on year with the 4% increases, it's cumulative, and they're now asked to pay 200 a month. They just can't do it, and they're falling into arrears, and they are at significant risk of homelessness. And it makes no sense as well, because if they do become homeless, as you know, Rory, the emergency accommodation will cost an awful lot more than supporting them with making sure that they're paying what they should in a local authority. It is not their fault that the local authority has not got the supply to put them into the house that they're deemed entitled to. But yet they're the ones paying the price because of a failure of the housing system in Ireland.
It is absolutely, and that policy shift away from building social housing to getting it through the private market, the private rental market. And it shows the absolute disaster of that policy, of that shift away from councils actually building housing, and the impact on, you know, again, these families and children of insecurity. And it's something that we need to keep highlighting. And Louise, thank you so much for joining me again on Reboot Republic. And I hope that we will come back to you again in a month's time and see where the figure is at again, and try and really keep a focus on this, and highlighting these figures, and also the human impact, the personal impacts of this crisis on families and children, and others who are being made homeless, because the attention needs to be kept on it, and really the analysis of what's causes, but also, of course, as we always point out, the solutions as well, which are there, which the government could be doing if it chose to. So listen, thanks so much for coming
back. No problem. And I'm just going to say, I hope the next time I'm speaking to you that we do have the breakdown of households.
Yes,
of absolutely. Of lone parent and two parent. That would be something good, if at least if we had that information.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, it would. Listen, thanks so much. And Now I'm going to read that article that I wrote for the Irish Examiner on homelessness, analysing the figures and also what's happening in the rental sector and the impact on children. So this is the article. And the headline is, we need urgent action if we don't want our children asking Santa for a place to live. If we are to avoid exacerbating the devastating effect of the housing crisis on Ireland's children, the government must bring back the ban on evictions in the private rental sector for at least three years, writes Rory Hearn. We have been given notice to leave our property. We'd been renting for 2 years. The landlord is selling. We applied to over 70 properties, but as of Friday, we are homeless. The council are placing us in emergency accommodation. I have 4 little girls, aged 7, 5, 2 and 1, as well as my partner. And I don't know where else we need to turn to try and find somewhere for us to have a home. Tony's call to RTÉ's Liveline last week provided another human story of how the housing crisis has spiralled out of control. What have we become as a country when people feel they've no option but to ring a national call-in radio show to try find a home? It is heartbreaking listening to the impact of that losing their home is having on children. Tony described how her 7-year-old is starting to get really bad anxiety because of this. Tony said her birthday is on the 1st of December. She said for her birthday, she doesn't want anything. She wants a house. She just wrote her list to Santa, saying that she just wants a house, a forever home for her family. That was Tony's 7-year-old daughter. Tony said, my kids as of Friday are living out of backpacks. They've got their favorite teddies packed. My 7-year-old, she came home early from school yesterday with her anxiety because she believes if she is in school for too long, she will come home and she's not going to have a home. This is a traumatic experience for that girl and her sisters. It is already causing anxiety, and research done on the impact of homelessness on children points to potential lifelong impacts. How do we accept children being traumatized in this way as a society, given that it is utterly avoidable? These children and families are being made homeless, not because of something they have done, but because of the failure of successive Irish governments to provide social and affordable homes and to give tenants protection from evictions. I'm deeply concerned that family and child homelessness is becoming normalized in Irish society. It is important we listen to the human stories like that of Tony and her family. Opening ourselves to the emotional impact of what is happening to these children, to actually feel the emotions it brings up in us. I cried and felt I wanted to do something to help. This is more likely to lead us to not accept this, to try to help, and to demand of government that something must be done. The sheer amount of children being made homeless in Ireland today is a case of state failure and violation of the basic human rights of the Irish state's most vulnerable citizens, its children. When people think of homelessness, it is often a person in a sleeping bag on the street. But most people homeless are in emergency accommodation, hostels, hotels, B&Bs and family hubs. Nationally, 953 families with 2,189 children are in a homeless emergency accommodation. Many more families are losing their family homes and experiencing all the trauma that comes with it, but are supported to avoid emergency accommodation. In Dublin last year, a total of 1,544 families became homeless, with a half of those entering emergency accommodation. The government should be doing all it can to avoid children being exposed to any aspect of the loss of their family's home. However, we do not count or track the total numbers of children nationally losing their homes, nor do we have official data on how many children have been made homeless in the last 6 months, 1 year, or even 6 years. It is an incredible indictment on our state that we do not even count the number of children made homeless. In 2017, I wrote a report with my colleague, Professor Mary Murphy, on research we did with homeless families in Dublin. The report was read out to the then Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, in the Dáil. It highlighted the severe impact of emergency accommodation on children. It said, instability can cause children to be consumed with worry and unable to focus on typical pursuits of childhood development. Feelings of anxiety and insecurity leave a child unsettled and out of control. Adverse childhood experiences, including homelessness, are related to the development of risk factors for less well-being throughout life. There are currently 1,100 children in homeless accommodation in Dublin for longer than 6 months. Half of all children in emergency accommodation in Dublin are there longer than 1 year, and a quarter longer than 2 years. I estimate that at least 18,000 children have experienced the trauma of homelessness since 2016. This is a social issue that we will be dealing with the fallout from for decades to come. Unfortunately, our 2017 report's recommendations for a strategy to eliminate family homelessness and for a statutory limit on the length of time families spent in emergency accommodation have not yet been implemented. Lone parent households are also more likely to experience homelessness, accounting for 53% of all homeless families. Focus Ireland have been concerned about the disproportionate levels of lone parent households experiencing homelessness since the start of the crisis. Louise Bayliss, their campaign's coordinator, highlights that while the causes of this are complex, they can be tackled. Issues contributing to the risk of homelessness for families and even more acutely for lone parents include rents outstripping housing assistance payment limits, poverty rates, childcare costs, and poorly designed policy measures relating to income assessment and maintenance. But a major factor causing homelessness of families and children is the evictions in the private rental sector. Evictions have dramatically increased since the lifting of the COVID ban on evictions. The second quarter of this year saw the highest number of evictions registered since 2019. We could see almost 2,500 households evicted in the private rental sector this year alone, with 60% of evictions due to landlords selling the property. This is the tsunami of evictions. It is a tsunami of trauma for children and families in the rental sector. Emergency action is needed, including a reintroduction of the ban on evictions in the private rental sector for at least 3 years to give renters some stability and reduce the unacceptable levels of child and family homelessness. And that's the end of the article. And my thanks again to Louise Bayliss for talking to me earlier around homelessness and its impact. And I will continue to highlight the ongoing crisis of homelessness and its impact on children in particular and families for the long-term devastating impacts it has on that trauma, which is utterly avoidable if the government implement the policies which are there, which could be done. So we will continue to highlight that. So thank you to those who are listening, and thank you for coming along the journey with us, for taking the time to have a listen. I know some of it is quite hard. It is depressing in many ways. It is upsetting, but I think we have to keep talking about it. And the more we talk about it and don't accept it as becoming normal, that is the way we can challenge it and end it and not turn away from it. So as always, thank you so much for listening. And if you can, become a patron of Reboot Republic. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Sign up whatever you can each month and help us to continue to cover the cost of producing these podcasts. And you get access to all the podcasts across the platform. And also a reminder, if you are around Dublin next week, that is on the 10th of November, we are having a live show from the Sugar Club. I will be there, Tony will be there, Martin and all the rest of the gang. And we will be talking about the housing crisis, homelessness, and even trying to maybe have a bit of a laugh at times and have a bit of, I suppose, live like we did before, a bit of madness, bit of anger, a bit of analysis, and chats with the audience too. So if you are around November the 10th, live show, come along. And take part and have a listen. And also, if you do have any issues you want us to cover on Reboot Republic, email us at rebootrepublic@gmail.com. Or if you have any comments, you can also get me at Rory Hearn on Twitter or at Reboot Republic, or also on Instagram. Send us your comments and feedback. We love to hear it. And thank you so much to those who are patrons. And we will talk to you all very soon. Thank you very much.